Hi, I'm Malcolm Hawker, and this is the CDO Matters podcast, the show where I dig deep into the strategic insights, best practices, and practical recommendations that modern data leaders need to help their organizations become truly data-driven. Tune in for thought-provoking discussions with data, IT, and business leaders to learn about the CDO matters that are top of mind for today's chief data officers.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever time it is, wherever you are in this amazing planet of ours. I'm Malcolm Hawker, and I'm the host of the CDO Matters podcast. Thanks for joining today. I'm thrilled to be joined by Jonathan Reeve, who is somebody kind of actually like me, chief product and chief data officer. I have been a chief product officer in a previous life. My first passion in business was product management. Some of you may know that. And then I made a transition into data. And I'm really thrilled to talk about Jonathan about this kind of the commingling of these worlds, what it means to actually be a chief data officer when your product is actually data. So we're going to talk about data products, but we probably won't talk about it in the way that you may be accompanied to as a data and analytics professional. But that's exactly the point. We're going to talk about building great products that customers want to use. Jonathan, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming.
All right, Malcolm, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here and talking about my two favorite things, like product and data coming together.
Well, and maybe even number three, in our prep call, you had mentioned that you have a passion for Lego. And I was just looking back at some of my notes. That was my favorite thing as a kid growing up. And it's so weird because I know so many people in our profession where that's actually true as well, that Lego is like one of their favorite things as a kid. It was certainly my favorite choice. I don't know what that says about us.
Well, I think that's, when you're a kid, maybe now online, there's less of it, but you're taking these, seamlessly, square blocks and then turning it into a crane or a car or something cool. And at the end of it, you're transforming these pieces of plastic into something cool. And that's, to some extent, that thrill of building something new is, kind of what we're doing with data.
It's exactly, I would argue, what we are doing with data. So I love the metaphor there. So you are the chief data officer at Beta Next Financial Services firm. Quickly tell us what you guys do and what does a day in the life of Jonathan Reeve look like?
Yeah, I'm the chief product officer at Beta Next, and I'm responsible for ideation in terms of what are the products that we should build. Beta Next is a accumulation of a couple of companies, Beta, Median, Maxit, and actually we just acquired a company called Delta Data. And so again, like the Lego blocks, each of those companies had a bunch of data assets and looking to see how to stitch those together to solve solve problems for our clients.
So how deep do you go into what I would euphemistically refer to as the supply chain, right? Mm-hmm. When you are maybe curating data or building data, how deep do you go in your role into kind of your supply chain and saying, well, I need this, I don't need this, or here are the requirements I need to define to do these things? I'm trying to differentiate what you would do potentially on a daily basis versus what a CDO who is focused on the data and analytics side of the world would do and draw a distinction there.
Yeah. So, I mean, the data, regardless of the data type, you want to have, and I'm going to use my language here, you want to have the definitive source. So it's important that when people are looking at data, that they understand that it's accurate and it is the definitive source. And so whether it's a piece of reference data in terms of identifiers or descriptions, or it's a corporate action, or in the case of Beta, we're actually presenting account names and account values. Because the underlying databases of Beta are the definitive source for that, we can guarantee high accuracy on the data where we are the definitive source. The value comes in is when we can commingle that with other data, market data, corporate actions, and get that from the definitive source. And now we're creating curated blends of data that our clients can count on for reliability because we haven't taken it from second or third or ancillary sources. We're trying to get that definitive source. So to answer your question, where BetaNext is the definitive source, that's quite easy. Where we're working with other third parties or we're integrating other content, then we have to make sure we get that level of accuracy. And then, of course, the art of the deal is all about linking. Unless you link the data in a way that's meaningless, doesn't create the value that the clients need.
So tell me more about linking, because to me, in my world, when I hear linking, oh, I think matching, right? So definitive source to me would be system of record. I think definitive source, we can all generally, that's conceptually kind of aligned to that. That's not too far from my beloved world of MDM, where we say, okay, this is the gold master, or this is the system of record, or the record of source record. But when you say linking, what does that mean? Linking your data to the third-party data, or linking your data to client data, or both?
Yeah, both. So, you know, when you have data, and obviously data is growing exponentially, and we should touch on that, the value comes when you can not only navigate from one data set to the other, but where you can draw conclusions, and hopefully conclusions that other people have not made. If you're looking for alpha, or you're trying to manage risk, or you're trying to present a consolidated view of your account to a client, you can create views that previously, because these data sets were not connected, people have these aha moments about, I did not know that. And we've created value because we are linking the data, and we're doing it in a definitive way. So I'm not questioning whether this data is truly relevant. So if I've got an account, I understand the securities in that account. I understand the value of those securities. I understand what the last trade of was of that securities. I understand if it had a corporate action and when those dividends were paid and when they will appear in my account. So all of those are data sets, as you know, in their databases of record. Yeah. But until you link them together to create value because you're satisfying some curiosity or doing some piece of research, you know, until you do that, you don't create the desired customer experience. And we live in a Google type world where you expect to have the information at your fingertips. And so linking is the way that we do that. So you can travel, you can literally travel from the account to the security, to the value, to the corporate action, to the, you know, was it involved in M&A action? What's the latest news on that company? If you want to be able to create all those connections, you have to link the data.
Okay, well, that sounds an awful lot like matching to me, but we don't need to get hung up on semantics as much as we love as data people to get hung up on semantics, and we certainly do. But there was something interesting in what you said there, which was this idea that you're going to create value by finding these aha moments for your clients and finding these insights that you didn't otherwise know were there. And in my experience, that's when the magic happens. Right. Like creating a net new sales, you know, dashboard. Okay, that's great. Or, you know, sales for last quarter dashboard. Okay, that's fine too. But the real value and the real aha is using data to expose things that your customers didn't otherwise know about. Now, I assume that process is reasonably bounded, meaning you're not just out there trying to throw 15 million pieces of spaghetti to the fridge. You've got a reasonably good idea what your clients are going to need. So tell me, and I'm putting words in your mouth, but tell me what that requirements defining process looks like. Like, tell me, do you have like the team of product managers that are going out and to clients and say, hey, what's going to make your life easier? And how do we try to go about finding those aha moments? What does that process look like?
Yeah. So, I mean, my job as a, to be a better product person, I have to be in front of customers. And, you know, I often say like 50% of my time is with customers. So I spend a lot of time with our sales team and I go to a lot of client meetings. And the reason I do that is, you know, first of all, they want to have product updates. I'm showing them a roadmap about all the great things that we're building. But more importantly, I'm getting feedback from the customers about what challenges they have and what they're trying to do. So as an example, right? So if they're looking for additional insights and they're looking to connect, let's call it my data, which is account information and balances, and they have a CRM implementation and they want to create better insights to their financial advisors so that they can have better tools available to them. We can potentially, you know, create a utility where they now got to, we connect their account information to their CRM information, and now I can do new and interesting things. So if Charlie Brown is my client and I've connected it to the CRM instance, and now I have information that Charlie Brown's daughter is going to graduate college and she's going to, you know, she's got a new job, I can now use that information to alert my advisor to make a call, say congratulations on the graduation. You know, do you want me to help, you know, her with her new employment, or sort of set up an account for her or anything? But the point is, you can, that's an insight that you may not have if you were just looking at, you know, here's my balance and here's Charlie Brown's balance. I can create like insights that financial advisor may not have had.
What role does, so in the process you just described, I do want to come back around on product management, but what role does, in the ideation process of coming up with these products, right? There's the need definition. Want to drill on that a little bit more, but there's also necessarily, kind of going back to my product management roots, there should be some idea of an ROI analysis. What role does that play in kind of the product ideation process? Do you have people who are like sitting down with clients and asking, hey, what would this be worth to you? And what would you be willing to pay for it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the worst thing you can do as any product manager is build things because we can. So go back to the Lego blocks, right?
Yes.
We can build so almost anything, you know, but the question is, will it add value and will a customer pay for it, right? And I don't know if anyone's taken sort of there's a course on this by a company called Pragmatic as an example, but this pragmatic product management, which is what they refer to sort of outside in product management. And what that means is we're getting insights and feedback from our customers about what problems they're looking to solve. We're not doing inside out product management, which is, gee whiz, I have a really cool tool over here and this really cool software that someone sold me and I've got some data over here and this is interesting, but it's like internally interesting. You know, not necessarily, is it a problem a client's trying to solve and will they pay for it? And if we do enough work up front and we have good relationships with customers and we can say that, you know, does this solve a problem and would you pay for it? Then there's, you know, the aha of an idea. And now we can build a prototype and we can go back and say, okay, here's an alpha version. Is it what you expected? But ultimately, you have to build stuff that people will pay for because, you know, we're, at the end of the day, we're a commercial enterprise, right?
Yeah. So is it correct to assume that people are managing those interactions are product managers on your team?
Yes, very much so. And so we have one of the sort of operating cadences we have at BetaNex is this project to product evolution, right? And so typically the way a client will say, I wish your system would do this for me, or I wish I could have the following feature. And we can either do that as a one-off project for that customer, says, okay, you know, we'll add this knob or dial for you. Or we can say, hey, that's an interesting idea from client one. Do you think client two and three would like it? And if we can repurpose it, which is where we want to head in that evolution from project to product, we can take that idea that we got from client one and rather than do it as a project, turn it on as a feature or a capability or an add-on or whatever you want to call it. And now we can roll that out to clients two, three, four, and so on. And that's, you know, this philosophy of, you know, build once and sell many is just obviously a much more effective way to run a company.
So data people take note. Sorry, Jonathan, quick aside. What Jonathan just expressed was that scalability from a product perspective is a function of incremental demand. Scalability is not necessarily a function of being able to efficiently do something multiple times, although that's certainly what it means. I stress on this point because in our world in data and analytics, we talk about data products and we talk about doing data products as a way to be infinitely scalable. But if nobody wants what you're building and nobody can get value from what you're building, then the scalability is completely irrelevant. You have built a scalable infrastructure that is literally a bridge to nowhere.
Right.
So before you dive into assuming that your end game is scalability, the end game should ultimately be figuring out, aha, this product is needed multiple times and there's plenty of demand for it. And the person doing that is the product manager. Now Jonathan, you mentioned clients coming to you and say, hey, I'd like a new knob, right? Or a dial or a button or something. You know, having been a product manager and having led product managers, I'm ultimately wary of when somebody comes to me with an answer, right? And often customers will come to us and say, I need the knob. But I've learned over the years to say, okay, wait a minute. What do you think the knob is going to do? Why do you need the knob? Tell us a little bit about the process that folks in your team use to really actually drill down on the core requirement here. And what is it about product managers that kind of makes them uniquely qualified to do what I just described?
Yeah, well, this is the classic, I'm sure everyone's heard this quote, right? If Henry Ford listened to his customers, he would have built faster horses, right? And that's where you have to take a need and dissect it and understand what they're truly trying to do. And is there a way to pick it apart and understand the end result the client is trying to get to, rather than it may not actually be a dial that they're creating. They want to create this end result. And like, what are you going to do with that dial? You know, ask a lot of questions. And ultimately, the answer might be different than just building a dial. The other thing I think that's potentially useful when building product is to think about things in componentize the solution into smaller parts. And the reason you want to componentize, and this is build a micro components rather than sort of one mega system. Because if you build micro components, then you stitch them together. So you build, you know, micro component A, B, and C to deliver solution D. Tomorrow, when you've got a different problem, you may be able to use A and B and this new component F to solve a completely different problem. So it's much better to build these components rather than, you know, what you call monolithic architecture, right?
So that does align to what a lot of data analytics people call a data product. So, data products to me exist on a bit of a spectrum. And there's many people in our world that believe that there's this kind of this left side, a shift left, which is kind of this lowest atomic unit, which kind of aligns to what you were just, which you were just describing, which is kind of some modularity there. And that's an extremely, incredibly valid approach. And if you're going to be building products, you need to have a very, you know, a highly efficient, what I would argue, a supply chain. But it does start, to your point, with that customer need. And if you're not doing it to solve a specific problem, well, then how are you going to stay in business in the long term? You mentioned yourself, your commercial business. So, yeah, I love this stuff. What about post sale, right? What about kind of managing the life cycle of a product? When do you know something has run its course and may no longer or should no longer be supported? Is that, you know, how do you think about kind of the overall product life cycle in your world?
Yeah. So like typically what I see is obviously, you know, you're launching, you launch a product and you've got this 1.0 of the product. And then as soon as you, I'm going through this today as we speak, so launching 1.0 product, and typically the clients, sort of the first adopters of that product, will come back and say, you know, if it only did this and it only did this, right? And so once you get those requests, that's where you ask yourself that project to product question. Okay, the first client wants me to create add-on feature one and add-on feature two. Should I do that, or is that something just bespoke for this client? Hopefully it's something that it scales, and now we get. And we do that, you know, once or twice, and we may do it for a couple of years. Ultimately, in the adoption lifecycle, obviously everyone's seen the curve of the adoption of the adoption lifecycle. Typically, something happens. Either the customers move on and they start to want different solutions. Technology moves on, and now what was really cool 4 or 5 years ago, or efficient, or valuable, the technology And as a chief data officer or a product officer, you have to stay abreast of the current technologies, because there are technologies out there today that didn't exist 5 years ago. And if you don't think about using them, you cannot build sort of world-class products So typically you'll know when things are a little dated, the clients are moving on, there's a new technology that allows you to do it better, or to some extent the demand is starting to tail off. And then you need to, essentially go into end of life mode, think about what the next generation of that product will be. And the hard part is, especially when there's revenue on that first product, is to force the migration to the next generation. That's very hard. Your CFO will probably ultimately force you to do it, because then otherwise you've got the support costs of two platforms. But if you're cutting edge enough, you'll move on to the new technology. But you've got to at some point issue the end of life letter and say, hey, this is end of life, and we're going to move to this next generation. And as you know, especially with data platforms, it's not like a logon. Generally, it involves a data migration, a switch, writing to new systems of record, and that requires a project on the customer site. And that's, those are generally, long processes, sometimes multi-year.
Congrats on your launch. Hopefully everything goes smoothly. Been there, right? Like, kind of fingers crossed everything goes smoothly. So, senior VPs of data and analytics, CDOs, if you're out there and you've got hundreds of dashboards that aren't being used, get rid of them, right? It doesn't help by having a whole bunch of dashboards sit around that nobody's using. And if you follow some of the things that Jonathan was just talking about, right? If you are razor focused on customer needs, if you're razor focused on solving specific problems, in theory, you wouldn't have built the dashboards that nobody really wants or needs anyway. In theory. Right. Like, if you are fully aligned to what the customers are needing, well, then they're going to be using the product, and because you build a product that is in full demand. So just kind of circling back, Jonathan, what I heard, my first line of questions were, how do you differ from like a CDO who was doing data and analytics internally? I didn't necessarily hear a whole lot of different. I heard data management, because you were talking about, housing the data, maintaining the data, matching data. Right. That's very much a data management function. I heard data integration, which is also a data management function. I heard managing data quality. What you spoke to was, making sure that you are creating curated, trusted, accurate, insights that your customers trust. That's inherently a data quality process. So I don't necessarily see a huge difference here between, what you would be doing, as a chief product officer, where your product is data, and where a chief data officer is managing things internally. What do you think? Do you think you're, how would
I think
you align?
I think you're exactly right. Like, what BetaNext is aiming to do, the promise of BetaNext is delivering on connected wealth, right? We're providing connected wealth solutions. What does that mean? How do you provide connected wealth? It all comes back to the data. The data is the glue that allows us to serve our customers. It allows us to provide insights. It allows us to create reporting. So to some extent, what I'm saying, data is the product, right? Now, you may present it in a GUI. You may present it in an API. You may present it in, a cloud share. But the product is the data. So you're absolutely right. I'm a CDPO. Sounds like something from Star Wars.
It certainly does, which would also align well to most of our audience as well. There's a lot of us that love Star Wars. So you mentioned about, new technology being a driver of product lifecycle changes and maybe the need to archive specific products. Let's talk about our favorite topic, number one these days in the world of data, which is AI. What are you seeing out there for your clients? You work in a highly regulated industry. What are you seeing in terms of demand for AI-based solutions? And then what are you also seeing in terms of, let's just say, the willingness to operationalize within some of these financial services companies? Because I'm seeing a whole bunch of stuff out there. I'd love to hear your perspective on what you're seeing.
No, so obviously you can't engage in any data conversation these days or go to a conference and not talk about AI. It's everywhere. But at the end of the day, the AI, and everyone knows this, the AI is driven by the data. And, what separates, your AI, right? Because you as an institution have a bunch of proprietary data, whether it's your security master, whether it's your account information, whether it's your patents, whatever your proprietary data is. What you want to do with AI is unleash AI on your internal data. And that, I mean, that's probably obvious, but unleashing AI on public data, anyone can do that. It's your internal data that will allow you to create new products, allow you to be more efficient, drive better insights, manage your customers better. So you, as the AI owner within your organization, want to create new insights with AI on your internal data. So by definition, for that to be effective, your internal data has to be useful. It has to be, I'll call it linked. You can call it matched, because it has to sort of all be available and available to that AI engine. If you don't make it all, if you don't make it available and make it sort of schematically useful, then, and you unleash the AI without that, you're going to get false positives, bad results. And you'll hear this from many, many sort of AI technologists sort of looking at that. They'll spend 50, 80% of their time wrangling, I love that term, wrangling the data versus unleashing the AI. And so that's why it's important, you know, this is a bit motherhood and apple pie. You've got to get that data. If you have that data foundation solid, then your AI machine will move much faster.
Well, how many of your clients do you know that you're talking to? You're spending a lot of time in the field. How many of your clients feel like they are ready or not ready? And what are they doing about it? Are your clients just kind of tiptoeing into POCs, or some of your clients going head, you know, full on into adoption of some of this stuff? What are you seeing from your clients' perspective?
So I think I think we are in the early innings here. Mm. So there's still a lot of experimentation. I sort of see, and this applies to us and our clients, they're playing with AI in two areas. One is to drive operational efficiency. So they've got some operation function and they want AI to say, okay, you know, this operations team, every time this happens, they click this button and they click this button. And if I could harness all of the motions that this operation team's doing using AI, I could automate that and make that process much more faster. So that's sort of on the operational side. And then I think on the other side is the insights, right? So I want to create new insights. So I want to scour and mine this data, and I want to learn something that I didn't know before, or my customers didn't know before, or which I can use to, you know, create product and generate revenue. So that's the two areas, both where we're playing and I see our customers playing, is operational efficiency and additional insights. What we're doing, and I'm not sure if this makes sense to everyone, but we're sort of starting with the operational side. Like, let's use AI internally to make our processes more efficient. And then what we learn there, then apply that to external products.
Well, that's, according to Gartner, you would be generally one step ahead of where most organizations are. So according to Gartner, where most organizations are right now is individual productivity on the desktop, right? Being individually, you know, whatever I'm doing, and I'm using just some chatbot to make my, you know, whatever I do, whether I'm in marketing or HR or software engineer. And then Gartner would say kind of the next necessary evolution is to use AI to make business processes more efficient, and not a lot of companies are there. It sounds like you may actually be a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of helping, you know, or leveraging AI to help those internal processes work better. So there you go. You get the two thumbs up. Let's circle back to just kind of the discipline of product management and the intersection of product management and what I would just loosely call data management. If I'm a CDO and I'm hearing this conversation, and I'm hearing me, Malcolm, consistently drone on in my LinkedIn feed about the importance of integrating data or integrating product management as a discipline into your data and analytics function. As a product person, what are the two or three things that you would recommend to a CDO to do within their organizations to become more product management driven in their daily operations?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we live in a world, and I'll use some famous platitudes, like data really is the new oil, right? And if you are the CDO in your organization, to some extent, you hold the keys to the kingdom, right? And whether you use, you know, whether you use that sort of knowledge of how data works within your company to drive efficiencies or to drive product, you know, I think you have a lot of ability to influence the direction of your firm, because at the end of the day, the company, no matter what the function is, whether it's HR or marketing or your product development or your engineering or your R&D, they're all using data. And if you are building out your data capabilities, your skills, you're managing it better, then ultimately you've got the power to influence innovation at your company, product direction, where investment goes, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. I heard a stat I used. This is a stat I used at a recent conference. The world, you started this podcast with the term planet. The planet has created more data in the last 2 years than in its entire history. So in other words, like the exponential growth of data is so fast that we've created more in the last 2 years than we have since the beginning of humankind. And so you can imagine what that means for the next 5 years. And so if you're sort of thinking about how to manage data for your firm, you know, you've got the ability, I think, to influence all sorts of things. And you should be sort of taking that awareness of your data management practices, your data management inventory, and you know, use that to get involved in the direction of the firm, I think.
So you used the word influence multiple times there. And I love that, because as a product person, I would argue that influence is a big part of what we do. You could kind of call it sales, potentially. You could call it product marketing if you want. But what role, either from an individual product manager perspective, or maybe it is part of your role, maybe it's part of everybody's role, what role does kind of product advocacy play for you? And how does that actually kind of transcribe in terms of, or how does that actually get operationalized from the perspective of your interactions with everybody else in the C-suite or your internal customers? You know, data people may call that like storytelling. I just think it's just product marketing. But tell me a little bit more about how, if there are ways to formalize some of the influence channels that you were just talking about.
I think, so first of all, as one of my favorite bosses said, we are all in sales.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter if you're, you know, a technologist, a data steward, whatever. We're all in sales to some extent, because you've got to get your ideas across. The other thing I think that's really important for any, for in the data world, is the ability to simplify the story.
Yes.
We have to tell the Crayola version of the story, because, you know, at the end of the day, data is intricate and complicated, and there's reference data, and you're going to use words like ontology, and executives are going to roll their eyes back. And so if you are a data geek and you spend your time with data governance and ontologies and metadata and all of that stuff, it's very, very obvious what we're talking about, and those words are useful. When you're at the C-suite and you're talking about using data to drive a strategy, you have to simplify the message and make it so, you know, whether you're using analogies or you're using stick figures, you got to figure out a way to simplify the message such that you can explain the art of the possible, the potential of what we could do if we leverage the data, but you got to tell it in such a way that someone who's not steeped in it every single day could actually understand.
I love it. And, you know, speak the language of your customers. Nobody wants to hear the techno babble. Maybe some technical people here and there, but for the most part, the C-suite and senior leadership wants to hear about results, right? More revenue, lower cost, less risk. I think that's a perfect way to end the conversation. What's a good way for anybody listening to this to connect with you? Are you active on LinkedIn?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. I do represent BetaNext in a number of conferences. In fact, we were just at an award dinner last night in the city, New York. And so, yeah, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn and I'll absolutely reply to you.
Fantastic. Jonathan Reeve, thank you so much for your time. For our listeners, for our subscribers, for our listeners, if you haven't already subscribed to the CDO Matters podcast, I'd be absolutely positively thrilled if you did that. Hey, quick sales plug. My gosh, I don't have a copy of my book sitting on my desk. I should. My book, by the time you're watching this podcast, which will likely be released in the fall, my book will have been out a couple of months. Don't forget to check out the Data Hero Playbook, available from Wiley. Go to Amazon.com, search Data Hero and Hawker. It'll come. I'm number one. I own the search term Data Hero. So be thrilled if you checked out my book. Don't forget to subscribe. Thanks so much for being a part of this community. Jonathan, thank you so much for your time. We will see you all on another episode of CDO Matters sometime very soon. Bye for now.